Good morning. Welcome to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Good to have you. Today we have as our guest Steve Hoffman, who is an author and has written a wonderful book called Clear Vessels, and which tells the story of his journey in realizing a life of loving and being loved. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Dr. Mike. It's great to be here. I've looked at your work and listened to your videos, and I see we have a lot of commonalities in our work, so I'm really excited for this discussion today.
Oh, yes, me too. Yes, and reading your I resonated so much with your story and your outlook. It's just really, it's a beautiful book that you've written called Clear Vessels. I really recommend to our audience to check it out. It's a very, very good book. So maybe we could start by having you tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I think I come from a perspective where I'm just your average citizen. I grew up in the Midwest, and my father was self-employed, so I knew all about hard work and efforting through life. I got good grades and went to school, got married, got divorced, and that was kind of the big change in my life. But now I spent the last 30 years my professional life in finance, but you know, I feel like it's taken maybe a more of a spiritual path now, but we'll see where that leads me. But hey, I'm just your average finance. Well, I've been told I'm not your average finance guy. I'm your average person. I think I have a very practical story that I shared because I think it could help a lot of people out there.
Absolutely. You know, in reading your book, your divorce was very, very painful, and I think that in some ways, going through that was transformative for you, no?
It was, you know, everyone talks about those things that were, at one point, the worst things in their life that turned out to be the best things, and that was definitely it for me. It really changed my whole life around. I had to basically give up a belief system that I'd been taught and that I'd used for the first half of my life, and I thought it was working, but it wasn't, and I ended up surrendering basically that belief system and having to find a way to find a new way to navigate life. That now with about 15 years of practice, life is much more enjoyable and pleasant, and I'm a much happier person. As you'll find, you know, there were suicidal moments in my life, and now I'm just very happy to be here.
Wow, so you really went just through a real transformation. What I experienced is more almost like an awakening experience for you.
Yeah, you know, in hindsight, now that I've kind of healed myself, you look back and say, well, it was just a divorce. You know, half the population seems to go through that. What's the big deal? But it wasn't just a divorce. It's, you know, as all of our stories do, I think they start basically at birth. You come out and you have to cry to get fed or to get your diaper changed, and so everything's on the outside world. And then you try to please your parents, and try to please teachers, try to be cool with your friends. And so it's all about seeking approval from the outside world. And I was pretty good at that. I got good grades. I was a very coachable kid and worked hard. Yeah, you know, it's all about working hard for the outside world. And when the divorce hit, I was kind of shocked. It was such a change. And if I look back in hindsight, you know, the foundation was crumbling. Finances weren't quite as good as I hoped. I wasn't enjoying my job. My marriage wasn't happy. But the divorce made me look at that. And I basically felt like a fraud at that time because I was trying to present this beautiful picture to the outside world. And I think most of my friends and family thought I was doing just great. But the divorce pulled the rug out from under me and made me realize that that way of living was not working. And so it started a path of looking internal and more about being and doing the internal work as opposed to your life being focused on doing and efforting and focusing on the outside world. I never stopped to ask myself, what would make you happy? And so yeah, that was a huge shift in my life. I'm just grateful for it. It was tough at the time, but boy, it's led me to great new adventures. It's led me to writing a book. I've just learned to enjoy life, and so I'm hoping that for readers of the book that, you know, perhaps it will shorten their journey. We're all on our own path, and I'm not trying to change anyone's journey. But if I can give some tidbits on to maybe make it a little easier or possibly shorter, that would be great, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. So in terms of this sort of transformation of perspective that you went through, you talked about what we all go through, which is being conditioned by the world to behave a certain way in order to feel lovable, in terms of the approval that we get, almost being addicted on the approval of the external world to feel lovable. And you had an awakening about that. As you look back on your divorce, I don't know how much you're comfortable talking about this, Steve, but what would you mind, if you're comfortable, just talking about what was happening in that relationship and what led to the divorce and how that relates to what you're talking about here?
Well, you know, just hearing myself talk a little bit ago, I used the word fraud. I felt like a fraud. And so what that tells me in hindsight was I was not loving myself. And, you know, the name of your show, How to Love, I think how to love begins with self-love. If you're not loving yourself, if I didn't love myself, how could my spouse love me? I wasn't happy with who I was or what I was doing, so I can't fault her for not loving me. If you want to give love, I've learned you have to fill yourself up with love. And so it all starts with self-love. And so I went from, the self-talk can really wear you down in bad times, and I was calling myself a fraud, a failure, a loser. And basically learn that's not true. We're all blessed beings, and we're all loved, and we don't have to do anything to earn that love. We come here being loved, and we just have to open our eyes to that, I think. And then once we learn to, you know, in my book I talk about it kind of a two-step process. It's clearing the negative thoughts out of your head, self-love being one of those negative items. And the second part is clearing. So once you clear all the garbage out, the judgments, the fear, the lack of self-love, then you can start planting the seeds, in the fertile soil and start using affirmations. And I found that a lot of very positive ideas come to me these days if I get quiet. I think in some of your work I read that you talked about, like, the sacred spot, you know, and you're really good at not using labels, and it's hard to communicate this stuff without using any labels. But that quiet spot, one quote I love from Einstein, he says, "I think 99 times and I find nothing. I stop thinking, swim in the silence, and the truth comes to me." And that's what I've found. If I quiet my voice, quit beating myself up with negative comments, and just be, it's proven to be very, very beneficial and life-changing.
Great wisdom. Really, really good wisdom. So in terms of making the story sort of clear for our audience, then you really were in a relationship with your wife, and you felt like a fraud, and you felt unlovable at the time. If I hear you right, you felt unlovable, and as a result of feeling unlovable, you weren't pouring out sort of an authentic well of love into the relationship. Is that kind of what happened in terms of what led to the divorce?
I think in all honesty that had to be it. If we had a counselor, and you know, this is your specialty, I think you could probably see that very clearly. But of course, when you're in it, and you're not aware of it, and I think that word "aware" is probably the biggest word in my vocabulary. You disengage from the brain, I think, and become aware of what you're telling yourself, what you're thinking, what, you know. And until you get awareness, it's hard to do anything. And so I think you hit it on the head. I was not aware of that at the time, but in hindsight, you're clearly right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you know, you left it and you were in crisis, and you write about this beautifully in your book in a way that was really very, very moving. You really have a gift with in your storytelling. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what that crisis experience was for you?
Yeah, you know, I know we all come from different perspectives, so I'll preface this with the things we're talking about. You don't have to be religious, you don't have to be spiritual. You can be an atheist, and in these, I think these universal laws still apply, but my perspective was a little bit more spiritual, and stop me if I'm going in a direction you're not intending, Dr. Michael. You know, one night I went down to the river, and I was mad at God. I was like, you know what, I've been doing everything that I've been told. I've been told to work hard and be a good student, be a good son, and please outside world, and it wasn't working, and I just yelled out, you know I'm a good servant, just give me the frickin' rules. You know I'll follow them. And that was kind of that moment of surrender. And after that, things slowly started coming to me. And probably the biggest one was, to jump to another related story, I was out hiking in the woods and at the state park, and I was the only one out there. It was a November day. It's much like today. It's January here in Wisconsin, and I see snow flying, and it reminds me of a very similar cold day. And, of course, no one's out at the park hiking but me. And coincidentally, the state park was named Hoffman Hill State Park, as in my last name. And
yeah.
You know, as a busy finance guy, I could never tell my thoughts from anything else. And but I just got this thought in my mind that said, look at the signs. And I'm like, okay, here's another one of those random thoughts, I think, but I've got nothing else to do. I'll listen to it and play with it. And I kept trying to look at these signs. And long story short, I get to the end of this hike, and there's this big observation tower. And I read the big sign that describes it, and there's nothing there, and I'm like, yep, it was just a trick of my mind again, just another thought that I shouldn't have paid so much attention to. And then it seemed to speak very loudly to me. It said, look at the sign. And I looked down at the ground, and there was a plaque that one of the contributors, the last name of this contributor was Hoffman / Godlove, which I instantly took as God loves Hoffman. And it confirmed to me that kind of the voice in the back of my head was not just my random noisy thoughts, this analytical investment brain, you know, always rambling. And so it taught me to learn to think into that silent, sacred stillness. I think there's a lot of, you know, as Einstein mentioned, there's knowledge and wisdom and love available to us. It's almost like a never-ending flow if we just allow it. But so often, you know, our mind is so busy, we can't hear it. Our brain is making too much noise for us to hear these thoughts or even pay attention to them. And I don't know about you, Dr. Mike, but when I was raised Catholic, and they always reference Jesus and whatnot and his quote, going within. I never knew what that meant. And so it started to give new meaning to me about going within. It's really been powerful and practical, and I was just never taught that, so I kind of had to learn the hard way.
Oh, this is such a beautiful story. Yeah, it's so powerful that in the midst of your pain, you know what you're saying, Steve, is very. I've done a lot of research on spiritual awakenings, and the work of Dr. Miller and also Dr. Taylor. I have done a lot of research on this, and your experience is very, very common to many people in terms of just being in a place of deep despair, or almost like at the end of the road in a way, where there doesn't seem like there's any way forward. And then that sort of surrender sense of calling out, like, please help me, anything. And then you have this beautiful, beautiful message that is still, I mean, even as you tell me now, it's just so moving to think that you heard that voice that said, look at the signs, And then you've been to a place you've never been there before, and there was a plaque that said, Hoffman God Love. That just sends chills.
Yeah,
what an amazing experience.
Next to my divorce, that was, you know, right up there. It's one of the biggest gifts in my life. Still brings tears to my eyes most every time I tell it.
It's extraordinary. And I think the theme of your book, which we can get into now, is that you had an experience that beneath all those thoughts and all those rules and all that conditioning, there was a sacred still place. And I've had a similar experience of stillness and being a place where there's almost an emanation of love. I don't know how else to say it, but an emanation of a sense of sacredness. And I get a sense that in your stillness practices that you tap into that sense of sacredness. Is that true?
Yeah, I try to do that every day, frankly, whether it's before work or over my lunch hour or multiple times a day. As I'm sure you can attest, it's such a happy place, for lack of a better word, that, you know, it's almost like you feel so good there that you really don't need anything else. So, sure, I do a lot of visualizations and affirmations, and we all dream of this pretty house and the perfect life, but it's almost, you get to a point where none of that matters because you're just so happy with where you're at. And I think it's in that non-attachment. You're not attached to outcomes or what, you know, what may come, and also non-resistance. You know, you're just in that happy place. It almost serves as a vacuum, and then that's where I found that the things you do like, or maybe even the things you never imagined, but a lot of positivity starts flowing in your life, and you just gradually get happier and happier. But it's not like, you know, we all are humans on this planet, and we all have tough days, so it's not like you get there and it's done. Every day can be a process of clearing and creating and finding stillness, and that's where, to me, my daily practice always comes back to awareness. I wake up and I say, well, how am I feeling? You know, for example, on a scale of 1 to 10. And if you're feeling like a 3 that day, which, you know, we all do, if you get in the habit of making yourself feel a little bit better every day and you become very skilled at that, it creates a lot of momentum. It creates a positive habit. And then you can get into that peaceful place more often. And then you'll have more and more days where you feel like a 7 or an 8 versus a 3. So it's not a magical answer. It's just I think there are some rules that kind of universally apply. And if you do your internal work and get rid of the garbage and sit in the peacefulness, and then that's where you can plant the seeds of, you know, positive affirmations, it almost becomes play at that point in time. Instead of, you know, when I was going through my divorce, every day was a struggle getting up and going to work and trying to, you know, put that fake smile on your face so no one knows what's going on in your life. To now, just to give you an example, I was walking into work, and one of my practices is I kind of take the long way into work so I can walk outside a little bit more, and I just appreciate the trees and the grass and the sky, the architecture, anything beautiful. And so start your day with really those two things, being aware of where you're at and then making positive actions to improve your mood. And so I was walking into work and my coworker drove by me, and I get in and she goes, Steve, what are you doing? I drove by and you look so happy and peaceful walking into work. And this was a Monday morning. And she's like, who looks happy and peaceful walking into work on Monday morning? And so I took that as evidence of what I'm doing is actually evident to the outside world.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, the power of presence and stillness, right? And then, as you say in your book, sort of creating a clearing, if you will, for a divine force of a creative force of love to sort of flow through you into the world.
Yeah. So a lot of what we've talked about so far is about, you know, dealing with the negative emotions. But when I wrote the book, my intent was I'd much rather play with the positive emotions and the people that are high flying already. And but as I wrote the book, I'm like, well, you can't start there. You have to teach people how to do it. But kind of the next step, once you're in the kind of the, everyone talks about going with the flow. And what I've learned is even when you're in the positive end of the spectrum, what I've learned to tell myself is that if what I'm doing is work, it's either the wrong thing or I'm doing it the wrong way. So you have to go at it with a positive attitude.
Oh, yes, positivity is so important. Well, this is great. Well, let's just take a little bit of a break now, Steve. And when we get back, maybe you can share with our audience a little bit about some of your practices and how you go about these. You have some wonderful visualization exercises that I would love for you to share with our audience. So let's take a brief break. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike with our guest Steve Hoffman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee, your host here with our guest Steve Hoffman. Welcome back, Steve.
Yes, glad to still be here.
Yes. So you've really talked a lot, Steve, about an awakening experience where you had sort of a liberation from the tyranny of the shoulds, where your love and value and self-worth was all conditional upon being good, I mean doing good and looking good and all that. And you discovered a sense of a sacred source of goodness within you, which was unconditional. And now you live life from a place of stillness where you tap into that source of goodness in stillness. And you sort of surrender to allowing that flow through your life and into the world. And you practice sort of a sense of presence. What I call in my approach, I call the three A's of awakening, which are attending, appreciating, and then acting with love. And I really can resonate with your comments in terms of translating that kind of languaging of it to sort of attending to the now, with a sort of a reverent, appreciative attitude that sort of recognizes the sacredness of this present moment. And I could hear you living that and practicing that. And you also add to that really the power of visualization, which we haven't talked much about on my show yet today. But visualization is very, very powerful. And I wondered if you could teach our audience a little bit more that you've discovered this new way of being in the world and this new way of being sort of a channel of love. If you could talk a little bit and teach our audience, Steve, about the practices that you actually engage in so that our audience could take away sort of an idea of exactly the kind of things that you do that have led to this kind of flowering of your life.
Yeah, so I've in the book I share dozens of different little tricks of the mind. I call them be happy tricks that have just come to me, and my intent is to share some of those that may work for the readers, but also to train the readers themselves so they can find their own tricks. It's, you know, the mind is kind of a tricky thing, and you have to kind of wear the ego down a little bit, Some days one trick might work. Other days you might have to do something different. But if you're quiet, they seem to kind of come to you. And the other big thing that you learn from all these tricks eventually is that when you're coming from that sacred space, or some might just call it trusting their intuition, that trust word is big. Once you start practicing it and you see the results of it, And you do trust it more, and it really changes the way you navigate life. Instead of looking at the outside world and seeing the facts, you start to rely more on your gut intuition. It's like when you meet someone for the first time, and maybe you think you really like them, or maybe you think they're shady. You know, that intuition probably has more wisdom to it than some people would observe. But back to, you know, some of the more specifics that you're talking about. You know, one sign, for example, I drive to work and there's this big radio tower. And it's thousands of feet high. Oftentimes the top is up in the clouds. And to me, that's just a reminder that today I don't have to climb to the top of the tower. I just have to climb one rung higher. So that relates back to that emotional spectrum. If I'm feeling like a three, you know what? I don't have to conquer the world today. I just have to feel better and climb one rung better. And maybe that trick to feel better is just to be aware of your sadness that day. Be aware that you don't feel like doing anything or conquering the world. So I think awareness of your own emotions is very powerful, and just allowing them to be, and you know, not slapping that fake happy face on. So that radio tower is one image that came to me. It just they just pop out from throughout the world. And here's a quick little meditation. You know, a lot of things are real practical that have come to me, but I was in Aruba, of all places, and I wasn't sad there. I was enjoying life, but I was at the ocean on the last day, and I had just a great couple weeks and was in stillness a lot. I had a great routine of reading positive information and doing yoga and hiking and swimming, and I was just so thankful. And in those moments, another message came to me that, you know, that you're this love and abundance and this feeling that you're having. They said it's always available to you. It's like these waves crashing in on the island. They're like these waves have been crashing for hundreds of years, bringing sailors. But it's always there if you just allow it. And so they gave me this little meditation. I simply call it relax and allow. So I picture myself laying at the very edge of the beach where the sand meets the water. You know, your butt and your shoulders are barely touching the silky sand. And as I inhale, I say the word relax. And then, of course, when you inhale, your body gets lighter in the water and it just starts to float. And I just let the waves take me where it wants to. And then as I exhale, the message said, just say allow, because if you just relax and allow, you'll get to wherever you need to be. You'll be in that flow. You won't be fighting the flow. You won't have that resistance, that attachment. And so these little powerful tools that are sprinkled throughout the book, those are two examples that are ones that I try to use as frequently as possible. And depending on your mood, you know, if you're feeling like a 7 or 8, you might pull out a different trick. But the point is, it's trying to empower the reader, empower them to live the life they want, empower them to feel like they want. Because what I've learned, if you can change the way you feel without regard to any of the external circumstances, there's really nothing you can't accomplish. We all have the power to change how we feel, and that in and of itself will change your life. So those are a couple quick examples for you, Dr. Mike.
Oh, I like that relax and allow practice. That's really wonderful. I'm reminded of Tara Brach, who Susan McDonald, I think her name was Susan, or Patrick, or Mary McDonald. There was somebody who came up with the initial RAIN acronym, which I'm sure you probably heard about, which is when you're in a great emotional distress, to recognize, and then allow, and then investigate, and then nurture, as Tara Brach talks about that. And another kind of practice similar to what you're, a little bit to what you're saying here. Well, this is great. You've given the readers our listeners a wonderful example here. Let's take another brief break, and then we'll be back to talk about more practices. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike and our guest, Steve Hoffman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee, your host, with our guest, Steve Hoffman, talking about becoming a clear vessel. Welcome back, Steve.
Yes, glad to still be around here, Michael.
Yeah. So you've talked so much about sort of these tricks of the mind that our audience will have to get your book to sort of read about these different practices you have, the many really good practices in there that involve visualization. I'm wondering if you want to share maybe one more practice with us with our listeners that you think would be a benefit to them?
Yeah. So one of my favorite practices that I use constantly, I call it feeling from the end. And Neville Goddard, who, you know, he's kind of a spiritual writer back in the, probably the 40s or 50s. I might have that a little bit wrong, but he had always talked about picturing yourself at the end destination. And feeling is a very critical component to that. Your body and mind don't really know. When you have feelings, they don't know whether it's real or not. You know, for example, when your kids are playing violent video games, for example, their body is feeling the violence. So so a positive way to use that is I like to picture me being where I want to be, whether it's in terms of life, whether it's sitting in a beautiful house overlooking a beautiful meadow or the ocean, or whether it's me simply driving 2 hours from point A to point B, and when I hop in the car, I picture myself, especially if the roads are slippery and dangerous as they might be here in Wisconsin. I'm sure you don't have that problem in California, but maybe it's mudslides there, right? Mudslides or forest fires. But I try to not only picture myself at the end, it's also feeling from the end. So if you can find the feeling, it's almost similar to what I mentioned earlier where I said if you can get so happy with where you're at, it doesn't even matter what's coming or going on. This is a very similar to that, except it puts you seated in the future at the destination you want. And so that's a very powerful thing to tap into feelings. And that's where all of this becomes play, tapping into feelings. And what I found is the universe, you don't even have to give a specific feeling. Like, say if you want to win the lottery and you're sitting there picturing the feeling of winning the lottery, well, I don't know how successful that will be, but if you can find, maybe you use an example that's not correlated. So let's say you're sitting there feeling exhausted or excited. Like sometimes I picture myself hitting a Grand Slam home run, and not only does this ball go into the grandstands, it goes out of the park. So far, no one's ever hit a baseball that far, and the crowd is silent in disbelief, and my teammates are looking, and they're looking at me like, "What the heck just happened?" And I kind of give them a shrug, like, "Who knows?" But I know what happened, and if you can tap into those feelings, the universe will fill in the details of how that feeling will actually occur in your future. So. That feeling from the end is something I play with quite a bit.
Yeah, I love that. I'll share, if it's okay with you, Steve, I'll share with you sort of a couple of variations of that I think are very powerful. And one of them is to sort of visualize your own ideal parent and visualize in a way merging with an image that you would have of your own ideal parent. One practice I have is to take my two parents who were wounded people who were imperfect and had their limitations, and I sort of imagine their innate goodness, and I imagine their core goodness manifesting and sort of through their woundedness and their impairment, and I visualize them and visualize myself sort of merging and sort of being them to myself. And sort of a little bit different from what you're saying because you're doing this on a time frame. But another way that I've heard this put is imagining your future self. And there are a lot of people who do this. Imagine sort of who is the future self that you want, that you can sense inside yourself that there is a yearning in your being to manifest. You know, what is that wise, loving future self? What is that person like? And then imagine an intention of living that future self today, or living in a way where you are informed by your future wise, loving self. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. What I'm finding is the more I work internally, and the more I'm just happy with myself, it almost becomes like it's not about me anymore. You kind of lose that ego, and you start mm-hmm. to sense that oneness that people talk about, which I think is hard for many to grasp. But another trick I use is I send love to, like, if you have enemies or people who've challenged you, or, you know, I've had a number of employers that I wasn't really happy with, and I've learned one of the best tricks is to send love to the people you least want to. And think of all the energy you spend thinking about those people and thinking what they said and how you want to respond to them. But if you can forgive them and bring that energy back and use it in a positive manner, get rid of that attachment to them. And then in the end, you're really, I'm kind of learning about this more now, you're really forgiving yourself. Everyone's kind of a reflection of you. So your story about, you know, picturing your parents as you want, I think it gets to a level where your life becomes about forgiveness and about sending love and extending love to everyone. And that's where I think the greatest joy lies in the end. We're all still learning, but that's kind of where I'm at in my path right now, is that it's about sending the love and forgiving people, especially ourselves. That's what it comes down to, forgive ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's so beautifully said. I work at a state hospital, Steve, and I work with treating mentally ill prisoners. And some of these guys have very what are called sort of antisocial personality disorders, and they're very, very criminal, some of them. They act out their criminality on the ward and cause chaos and a lot of disruption. And they're just profoundly, some of them anyway, just a few of them are profoundly, they can really cause a lot of distress and upset and be dislikable to people because of their criminality. And so in my morning meditation, if I happen to get a patient like that who's really stirring things up and causing a lot of chaos and havoc, I send them love in my morning meditation and wish them well. And I find that it's necessary for me to do that so that I can go to work with an open heart with them in a generous and non-reactive way. So I wanted to thank you for sharing your great wisdom that as you forgive others, you are forgiving yourself, because we all have those elements within ourselves. No? Isn't that true?
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful way to end this. I think that's probably the most important thing we can do, is send love to others. What greater achievement can there be?
Yeah. Well, Steve, it's been great to have you on the show. Say that again.
I was just going to say, you can't send love if you don't fill yourself up with love first. So do that, and then send love, and all will go well.
Exactly. Create a clearing within the stillness of your heart, mind, for love to flow in and then flow out through you into the world. Be a clear vessel, as you say.
Right.
Well, Steve, it's been great to have you on the show. Your book is called Clear Vessels. I really encourage our audience to pick up a copy and read it. I find it has a lot of practical suggestions for these kinds of what you call tricks, but I would call maybe practices, perhaps. And it's very insightful, and you are a blessing to the world. Thanks again for being on the show, Steve.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Dr. Mike.
Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Dr. Michael McGee here. If you want to learn more about me and my work, you can visit my website, which you can reach easily by just typing in howtolove.com, and that will take you to my website. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation with Steve, and in reflecting on it, again, I'd like to point out that he had an awakening experience which transformed his life when, in the wake of a very, very painful divorce, he was just not knowing what to do. Like he said, his way of operating in the world, the rules he had been given by our society, was, you know, to perform and do good, and that then he would be rewarded a rewarding life. And what was missing in that was a sort of a sense of living life from an innate sense of his own innate goodness. It, because our society gives us a message that our goodness is conditional upon us behaving in a certain way and achieving certain norms or whatever. And there's very few people who are blessed to grow up in a family where they are really have parents who are awakened and who have an awakened sense of their own innate goodness, which is unconditional, and who then teach their children through role modeling and just through the living and the daily course of family living that they are innately good as well. And that the goal of life, the meaning and purpose of life, is not to achieve certain standards like doing well in school or getting a certain house or a certain job. That the meaning and purpose of life, in order to feel that sense of goodness, is not conditional. It's not to achieve all these things to get those. Maybe get the right spouse, get the right partner, get the right awards. And so people are raised, many people, with sort of an implicit message that really, in their innate basis, they're not good and worthy. That is even represented in our European culture with the idea of original sin, the idea that that is in some religions where you're originally flawed and sinful, but it is only through good works that one can redeem oneself and make oneself worthy. And there's a lot of that kind of unconscious belief that a lot of people get poisoned with. And Steve had an awakening experience where he realized that as he put it, I think the sign said Hoffman God love, and he interpreted that as God loves Hoffman. And whether you believe in God or not, I think what he tapped into was an initial awakening experience to his own good, sacred nature. And now what he does is he's transformed his way of living to living from a place of stillness and where you clear the mind a little bit and really get out of your immersion in thought chatter, and where you can really experience that sense of your innate goodness and wholeness and sacredness. And that's why they say that stillness heals, and because you can really tap into that innate felt sense of your goodness and wholeness. And then when that doesn't become an issue anymore and your life agenda doesn't become a worthiness project, then suddenly you can transform while you're living your life. You can transform it rather than to becoming good or becoming worthy. You can transform it as Steve experiences, as channeling that goodness, that love into the world, benefiting others, and just enjoying this gift of existence. So you really, he really gives a great example of that. I think in terms of what he said about how forgiving others is a practice of forgiving ourselves, I'm preparing a talk for an emotional sobriety weekly seminar that is being given by my colleague, Dr. Alan Berger. You know, one of the things that we look at in doing 12-step recovery work is in step four, as we look at taking a fearless and moral and fearless and searching moral inventory, which it can be very, very, very difficult to do, because what we do is we look at not only our virtues but also our character defects or character vulnerabilities and the ways that perhaps we have wounded ourselves and wounded other people, the ways that we have lived unskillfully, the ways that we've been destructive and harmful to ourselves and to other people. Very, very difficult to do that work, and they recommend that if you're doing step four work in a recovery program, that you not do it alone, because when people begin to look at their themselves, there can be a lot of shame that comes up when you look at yourself very, very, very honestly. A lot of shame and a lot of judgment towards oneself. And again, I think we learned that we were conditioned in a way to judge because we live in a society where we're marinated in just a whole sea of judgments about who's good and who's bad and who's worthy and who's unworthy. And so our brains have been kind of programmed to think in terms of a way of judging ourselves and other people. And this kind of judgment around our unskillfulness or our harmfulness can be very, very, very painful and lead to a lot of shame, a sense that we are just bad people again. So as I've been reflecting on this, I've been really reflecting on the fact that really looking very, very honestly at how we're programmed and the way that our programming works in terms of bringing us a fulfilling life or not, it really requires a sense of non-judgment and a sense of empathy and a sense of compassion. I think about the kind of unskillful behavior that we engage in that's destructive and hurtful to other people as really arising out of our own sense of our woundedness. And really there's a spiritual wound at the core of this in terms of what Steve was talking about, in terms of the message that we're given, again, that we are unworthy unless we meet certain particular criteria. And we experience this when we go out in the world every day. If you, for example, cut somebody off by accident or turn the wrong way, not paying attention, somebody could yell at you and tell you you're an asshole. And so we're dealing with that kind of really wounding judgment all the time. So I really, as you look at your way of being in the world and to degree which you find yourself being a channel for allowing love to flow through you into the world and the way that maybe you are blocking that and being caught up in thought chatter and shoulds and all that sort of thing, I really encourage you to have a tremendous amount of compassion for yourself and to really take on an attitude of non-judgment. As Steve talks about, when he talks about sending prayers and well wishes to people who maybe have upset you or who have harmed you, I think that's a great practice because then as you do that, you are basically essentially forgiving and sending yourself those same well wishes for the ways that you have maybe wounded or harmed other people. So, a lot of food for thought here. I hope you found this session today helpful. I encourage you to check out Steve Hoffman's book, Clear Vessels, which you can find out more about at clearvessels.com. In the meantime, I hope you have a wonderful week, a week grounded in love, and hope to see you back next week.